This is a podcast for humans. So this is a podcast for you. Be ready to explore, open to engage, and adventurous enough to try on a different set of lenses. We aren't here to tell you what to think, but rather to invite all of us into more conscious ways of thinking. Whether you have experienced difficulty or happen to be full of joy, we imagine episodes that give you space to be exactly what you are, a human being. Our discussions will be designed to ask the question, what does it mean to be human? If you listen in and walk away with more questions than answers, then count it a win. This is a podcast for humans.
Hey everyone, welcome back to a podcast for humans.
Whoop whoop.
Yes, sir. This is my good buddy, Jake Stringer. Of course, I'm Ryan Lelf, and today we have episode 7. Man, 7 already.
Coming to you live from Oklahoma and Eastern Kentucky. And everybody just turned us off. You're like, oh Lord, a bunch of hicks. No, I'm just kidding.
So today is conversations we have, and yes. That was birthed out of the pre-conversation before we hit record today, because we just have several things that was coming up, and we just feel like we're excited and led and want to bring those out in this episode. And so yeah, me and Jake have some pretty fascinating conversations, even when we're not recording, and we're going to do our best to just act like we're not recording and bring some of those to you guys.
Yeah, man. And I'm okay just saying, I mean, how you want to just say what we just said about the investments and then just see where that goes?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. So for those of you that may not know, Jake and I are in basically a passive income space where a lot of the things we're involved in would be considered more like high yield, high risk. There's definitely a lot of uncertainty, a lot of unknowns. You can have some really big wins and you can also have some essentially big losses. And right. Some of the things that we have both been involved in have not worked out so well. But the interesting dynamic in our relationship is I'm the one that finds the opportunities typically, or at least I guess all the time in this relationship, and I bring them to Jake. So one of the things we talk about all the time is like, well, then if Jake decides to move forward and those don't turn out well, what does that look like and feel like for me? And what does that look like and feel like for him? And so, Jake, let's just kind of unpack that dynamic for people. First and foremost, I know consciously that number one, I never felt like I had any energy about me that was trying to convince you that I knew for sure whether an opportunity was really going to go well or not. I would just say, hey, this is something I found. This is what I know so far. This is how it's been working for me. Does that sound like something that might interest you and your family?
Right. And you're enthusiastic, but you're never saying, oh, this is a sure thing. You know, you're never using any tactics like that. And you know, and even the first thing that Michelle and I got into that you brought to us, I loved how you brought it to me, you know, because I think I speak for a lot of people that I'm not into the pushy thing. Remember, actually, with one of the opportunities, I was dealing with another guy and I actually had to message the guy and I said, hey, dude, like, no disrespect. I just don't like how you speak. I don't like your energy. And I would like to part ways with you. I don't want to deal with you.
Right.
And right. And then I messaged you that and you said, you know, a similar thing had happened with a few other people. And this guy's approach, I'm not saying his approach is better than or worse than. It's just not I'm not jiving with it. And some people would jive with it. And I think that's awesome. So I don't want to be the guy that he's dealing with that's constantly just
irritated.
Frictioning. Yeah, irritated. Yeah. Yeah, So, but you've never been that way, you know, and I think that speaks to your,
at least from your perception.
From my perception, no, you're enthusiastic and you go head first, which I love about you, but I've never felt like you're forcing me or pushing me or manipulating me, using some form of sales trickery or, you know, nothing icky feeling has ever come from you.
Well, you know. I don't think anyone is for everyone. I mean, I know it sounds like a
dude.
I mean, it's just
that is so helpful,
right?
Be like, free to be you. Attract the people that like the real you,
right?
And realize some people that like whatever version of you you've shown them will leave your life. But the universe is benevolent and is faithful to bring you the people that like the real you. And that takes faith. That takes trust. But it is true. And there may be at a period of time where you're having to trust, where a lot of people walked away from you. But I promise there's nothing better. Like Ryan and I, look at how real we can. I just want to point this out if I can.
Yeah.
Like Ryan has brought investment opportunities to my wife and I that we have put significant chunks of money in that didn't work.
Mm. Mm.
And he and I realize, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but we're still able to be really close bros. We got this podcast together. And not only that, we are talking about it face to face right now. And I have nothing but love for Ryan. Because as we're about to get into, he merely brought me the opportunity. My wife and I have our own intuition and guides that we go with. And sometimes, you know what? And this is a good segue, but sometimes you follow your guide and you know that you know, but it still doesn't quote work out, especially in the short term view. And so then you think, oh, I fucking missed it. But that's kind of what we want to get into today is, you know, taking the long view. What if you needed to miss it? Because the universe, you're going to experience pain and pleasure. But what if both are good and both are necessary?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. Is it even possible to even figure that all out? Like, can you even really trace back whether or not something actually is working out on your behalf? Like, is that just a made up idea in our minds? And are we actually creating a much more difficult and challenging human experience by making the assumption that there is a time and space in this planet Earth experience where we go, oh, I know for a fact that when I made this decision and I followed my gut and it definitely didn't turn out. And, you know, that's just been horrible, but I'm still alive. Like the story is not over. How do we know what all is entangled? How do we know? Like, what if you fast forward and somehow you could see that it was during that decision that you happened to meet another human? And
right.
you then determined you would have never met that human, you believe, if you had not made that decision. Yet that decision you've decided was, it was bad. I mean, we lost so much money. And yet then now, what if you were saying, but meeting this human has created this, this, and this. And because of that, this amazing thing we're now experiencing.
Yeah.
And what if you start to go, oh, wait a second. What if I just let go of my perception about everything? What if it's just all temporary? It's all impermanent. And what if really I actually don't know how anything's really going to turn out and unfold? So I just, right. The invitation is to come back and have an act of faith and trust once again.
Right, because you can build up scar tissue and become calloused and say you can close yourself off to all future experiences because one or two things went bad or whatever went south. And then you're then closing off yourself to the people you might meet if you tried again, you know, like you said. And it's letting go of that definition of things as good or bad. Like, they just happened.
Yes. Yes.
The literally my pillar is that the universe is benevolent or good. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to have painful losses, whether they be financial or relational. It doesn't mean that. So often we push pain away when sometimes it's needed. You know, like I remember one time or adversity or and before I say this, I want to say. Ryan, you brought me opportunities. That's what you did. And these were opportunities that really, and several of these, I want to say, are working great. And it's fucking awesome. And I'm willing to take a couple that didn't work because, and I'm not angry at you at all. And I want to say for the record, unapologetically, I don't think anyone should be mad at you because we're all grownups. We're wearing big girl and big boy britches and we make our own decisions. And I think it's tough because you're probably dealing with a lot of people at different levels of consciousness and it's tough when you have people in your life that are still really prone to just spewing blame everywhere, but at themselves. And these are some hard things to hear, you know, is for me to be told I'm to blame because I'm the one that pulled the trigger. Like my ego is like, oh, but I want to fucking blame that first guy that I dealt with. You know, I want to blame somebody. But the truth is, what if I don't even blame myself? Then I don't have to feel guilty. I don't have to feel like shit. What if I'm just like, man, okay.
What's the payoff? Why do we seem to enjoy blaming? What temporary
relief? Right. It's like a temporary ego pain relief that you're feeling. Like you blame, it brings that little release valve to the big feelings you're feeling. If you can just divert some of what you're feeling and you put it in the form of blame and you point it in a direction or multiple directions. And we all know people like this. And I think it makes you feel better in the short term, but you're not dealing with the root issue, which is personal responsibility. And that's the hard word. And I don't speak from a place of arrival, as always. I'm in process.
Yeah, Jake, do you ever consider that, especially knowing that, you know, you and Michelle, it wasn't like I sent you a message, told you about the opportunity. You're like, yeah, let me send you my money. I mean, like in every way, in every opportunity and through every process, you all took some time to make sure you checked in with yourself. I know you would agree. Like I always gave you the space and the freedom to go on your own path and your own time frame and decide to whatever. And you could feel it from me. I was not attached to whether you said yes or no, because you've said no to some, you've said yes to some. And I'm the same all the time.
Right.
Because I don't know. I can think I know how something's gonna go, but I really truly don't know. I mean, there's no way to know. So
I've brought some people in to one of these opportunities now, and I've had, you know, the people jump on, and then like a week after that, the company just decides to completely revamp their website. And you wouldn't think that would be a huge deal, but it activates that need for certainty that we have, that need for stability and predictability that is conditioned into us that really doesn't exist in a lot of these spaces.
Yeah.
And so it challenges people inevitably, like pretty quickly. So I'm having to, like, on a very much smaller scale than you, field and kind of manage these people's emotions and try to meet them where they're at.
Yeah.
And it's manageable for me because it's just a few people, but I've seen it on myself on that scale. You have the different types of people, the freaker outers, you know, in anything unforeseen happens right to level 10, you know, freak out. And it's like, okay, all right. I see, you know, so I felt it as well.
I think the evolution of growth as a human being is, I really enjoy that for the most part, there's just not much. I'm sure there still is, but my own perception of myself, there's just not a whole lot that can freak me out anymore.
Well, I mean,
it doesn't mean I don't feel, it doesn't mean I don't feel frustration or pain or think, oh man, I really wish it wasn't that way. But I just have a sense. And here's, I think, part of why that is, Jake, is I look back at all my decisions, whether that was earlier this morning, last week, 2019, or when I was a young adult. I mean, it doesn't matter the time frame. And I've come to the conclusion that at the time, I truly thought the decision I was making was a good idea. I mean,
right.
with the process I went through, with the information I had access to, with my current level of comprehension,
right.
consciousness, and everything that I had available to me, I went into that decision thinking, man, this is going to pan out for me. Otherwise, why would anybody make the decision?
Right. Totally.
Right.
You knew what you knew when you knew it and nothing more. And you currently know what you know right now.
Right. But here's the other part.
You can't see it all.
There's also things after I made certain decisions that unfolded, and not even the people in control of that thing knew that that was exactly how it was going to unfold.
Right.
So now that it's unfolded, of course it's easy to go, well, that was a stupid decision.
Right.
But that didn't even make any sense, because there was zero ability to know how it was going to unfold at the time you were making the decision. You had to make the decision on the premise that I don't know what's about to unfold.
Right. I totally. I mean, and think about the level of self-trust there. I think even making a decision like that when you don't know how it's going to pan out maybe scares a lot of people, because we have such a need for predictability and quote certainty, which we know is an illusion. We absolutely know that's an illusion. You don't know what's happening 30 minutes from now.
Can you imagine? I just want you to take a second and just literally allow the universe, God, source, spirit, to flood your mind right now of every amazing moment you have shared with your wife, Michelle, since you've met her. Just let it flood you right now. I mean, just start thinking about every trip, every kiss, every moment, every walk through the park, the hand holding, when you had your kids, the way she looks at you, a nice love letter she's written, like just, is it coming to you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Now imagine, how many years has it been since you first met her and started dating approximately?
16 years. I met her in 2007.
Now imagine 16 years ago, you were paralyzed by the fear that it didn't matter what girl you met. You just believed it wasn't going to go well. It was going to turn out bad. You were going to end up divorced. They were going to leave you, right? And so because of that, you couldn't even get yourself to date. You couldn't get yourself to ask anybody out. Even though you wanted that, the thought of it not going well felt so certain in your mind. And so now fast forward and imagine every moment that you just had flood your mind, you never got to experience it because of the possibility that it was not going to go well.
Because I had had breakups. I had had relationships end. I had had negative things happen in my family. Reasons to, quote, logically say future relationships are going to go poorly as well. But pain can hold you hostage or set you free. Like, what if the thing that just ended badly is just a reminder that not all things go badly? Like... It doesn't have to mean we choose. I think that's so, dude, we're like you're saying, like we so easily believe that everything outside of ourselves is imposing upon us.
Yes.
Whether we should be peaceful or not, happy or not, joyful or not, feeling abundant or scarce. But what if all of that literally is designed to lead you to realize, dude, it's all you. You get to choose what lens you're looking at everything through. And that doesn't mean that, like you said earlier, you said nothing really rattles you anymore. But you still make a choice each time. It doesn't mean you didn't feel the disappointment for a second that an investment didn't work out, or even a week or a month. You know, what if these investments that didn't work out came to me so that I could ascend in my consciousness to get rattled less, to get to a place where that which is uncertain and unknowable isn't lording over me. And you know, and whether something, quote, pans out in the short term or not is lording over me. Like, that's a hard life. And I think people listening may be currently living that life. Like, let's take a minute and actually assess with honesty how we process things. Are we constantly, you know, on emotions? And I like peak emotions. I like to feel big emotions.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Who doesn't?
And generally we would say, like, joy, peace, happiness, love. Let's feel those on the mountaintop, you know, but what about the valley emotions? We push those away. Get me out of the valley. Okay. I want to go back on the mountaintop. But dude, there's a shitload of ascension and consciousness of growth in the valley. There really is. And it's so much harder to, like, quote, the language my wife uses is to sit with it, you know, like, feel the sadness. Cause, and what if sadness, pain, anger aren't bad? You know, what if they're teachers, they're mirrors? And when you take a second and you kind of access your higher self that is with you right now, there, it can partner with these events that have happened to you, people that have left you, investments that have gone south. And dude, so much growth happens. I mean, like I just told you, I play music and write songs and stuff. And I just wrote a song where the pre-chorus was, and I sent it to you, the unfinished version. It was, I see that what I push away, I often need. And that was me reflecting on the hard moments, the big, sad things that happened, and then bringing myself back into the present. And I actually, you know what? I asked my body, what do I feel about these things? And it was thankfulness. And that was when the clarity for those lyrics came. Because I can literally notice myself, something that brings those, quote, negative emotions, which I don't believe are negative. You know, the knee jerk reaction is to push away. No, you know? And so if I blame somebody, that makes me push away a little portion of this disappointment that I feel, you know, but I need to feel all of it, even though it sucks, because it's not the end of the story. I'm still breathing. Michelle and I are still eating. My kids are so happy. You know, there's all these magical things surrounding us at the same time.
Well, what if it's our own brains, minds? I'm not sure what to even call it, but what if we could let go of labeling experiences? And what I mean by that is what if the real satisfaction comes from learning how to experience our experiences. So in other words, I do not know what I'm about to potentially feel. I don't know what I'm about to experience. I have no idea how I'm going to view this once I'm in the middle of it. So I'm going to go for it. I'm going to try this. I'm going to go here. And what if at the end of my time, what if we are, because I think we're kind of built to have like measuring sticks, I'm starting to wonder if my measuring stick isn't going to be, man, I sure got to experience a hell of a lot in my time on planet Earth. And I'm so grateful for all of it, because in the times where we experience something that is uncomfortable, it's painful, it challenges us, it's not what we think we want. Is it not just the contrast? I mean, how do you ever know what you want if you haven't experienced something that you decided you didn't want?
Dude, let me give two examples of contrast, because I'm super passionate about contrast. The first one is, you know, we've lived in Ecuador for almost 2 years, 21 months. We've been, okay, and we're here located in the United States. We've been without a dishwasher for 21 months. Okay, we're doing our own dishes 3 times a day minimum. You know, 2 to 4 hours a day cleaning dishes. Well, we're currently renting one of my father-in-law's rental houses. And when we moved in June 1st, when we got here from Ecuador to visit, guess what? The dishwasher's down. Well, it took a month to schedule the plumber and get the new dishwasher, blah, 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 blah. 4 days ago, the plumbers show up and install the dishwasher. And I'm telling you, because I just went 21 months without a dishwasher, I could cry at how thankful I am. Because now I know, I think I always want a dishwasher in my life. because hashtag first world problems, but at the same time, problems are relative. And if you're from the first world, your problems still feel real. Okay.
That's right. Well said.
So that wasn't really a problem, so to speak, but that opens up 2.5 to 4 hours a day where I can be experiencing different things besides washing dishes. And I'm really thankful. I was telling my father-in-law, what was it like for the people in the 40s or 50s, whenever it was invented, 60s? It was like a revolution, you know, like, and it's because we went without it. You know, even in Ecuador, we went 7 months without a vehicle. And again, hashtag first world problems. But when you're in a foreign country where you're using WhatsApp and Google Translate 3 to 5 times a day to get a taxi driver to show up to your house and take you to go do your laundry or go to the market to buy avocados or whatever it is. And you have no independent mobility, and then you get a car. It felt like it must have felt when cars were invented. Like, that's how good it felt for us to be independently mobile again after going just 7 months with 3 small kids without a car, because of the contrast. You know, and I want to toss it off to you after I say this. I don't know about your parents, Ryan, but when I would act spoiled when I was growing up, my mom would say, and I've talked to Michelle and her parents said the same thing, I just need to take you to Africa so you can see the kids that have nothing and their bellies are bloated because they haven't eaten in 24 days. And then you'll know how blessed you are. And that used to annoy the fuck out of me. But Michelle and I were talking. And we were like, you know what? Their intuition knew that we needed contrast.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the perfect language to say it.
Right.
You know, and the spoiledness would build up to a breaking point where they would just explode and say all that stuff angrily.
Yes.
But really, they were on to that frequency where the universe was saying, you know what? Things are a little out of balance. You guys need some contrast.
Yeah.
To then become grateful again.
Versus
and so,
the
yeah.
sense of entitlement. Which
versus
can happen.
The sense of entitlement.
Which happens to all of us, by the way. No one's
totally,
immune to that.
Dude,
yeah.
All of us, bro. All
and
of
maybe
us.
Some people are further on the spectrum towards entitlement than others, but we've all been there. We've all acted that way, and we've all probably not realized it in the moment. You know, it's later you tend to look back and be like, okay, I think I was acting pretty entitled. And you know what? I probably still am to some people, because there is no reality. There's only perception. And I'm sure people can easily look on and be like, ah, man, you know, Ryan's entitled or whatever. Right.
Right.
But the thing that you just brought up was the thing that I had on my heart the whole time you were talking, which is there really anything better than being willing to constantly focus on how grateful you are?
Dude, it's one of the most dependable practices.
Yes.
It is always there for you.
Always.
No matter how dark it is. Dude, if you make yourself just think of a few things you're grateful for. It's crazy how the floodgates open, and before you know it, you've thought of like 39 things.
I mean, it's unreal. And then does it ever hit you? Wow, how did I come up with 39 things? I hadn't even thought of 24 of those, and I don't know how long. Holy smokes, right. That means I'm living every day benefiting from those things that just flooded my mind. And how often do I even take a moment to express gratitude, to be thankful, to live in the reality and the present moment that like that is my life?
Totally, bro. Totally. Like it almost deserves a moment of silence, because I almost felt myself starting to go there and think of everything I'm thankful for.
Yeah.
Like I'm even thankful that this podcast has materialized.
Yeah.
Like how cool. I mean, I love it. And I've wanted a way since Michelle and I stopped pastoring, a way to like, cause I still love to converse about spiritual things and, you know, and I'm like, how do I do that? Not in a weekly gathering church or a Christian podcast form, you know, and I know you've had a journey with Christianity too. Plug for future episodes.
Yeah, we're definitely going to walk that out. Like,
yeah,
you know, what was it like being a Christian, born into a Christian family? When did you and I first start asking questions? How was that received in the Christian community? At what point did we truly have a realization like, I just can't keep believing what they're saying I'm supposed to believe? And then where do you go from there? And then what do you do in the transition? And then what do you do after you transition out? And then how do we view Christians and Christianity today? So much to talk about, so much to say. I have nothing but love, by the way, for that entire journey. And I don't feel any anger anymore or any resentment. It is what it is. And there are elements of it that I do feel a lot of gratitude for. There are definitely elements of it that do not make sense to me personally anymore. But I also have no desire. I don't have anything to convert anybody to. I'm not interested in trying to change someone's mind. If they're wanting their life to change and they're wanting their mind to change, and something I says sparks them to go down a path or to examine things that maybe they haven't looked at before, well, fantastic. I mean, that can be nothing but healthy, but I'm not attached to whatever conclusion they land on or wherever it leads to.
Right. I mean, dude, I remember going on a quote. I mean, I'll just say it. I mean, it was a mission trip to Berlin and Cologne, Germany. Mm. And so we would go to these, they were called like Plotzes. So there's like Alexander Plots and like all these Plotzes. And they're these big like squares in the, like usually downtown in these cities in Germany. And we would look for, we would put on a skit and try to attract people. And then we would go, when the skit was over, we'd go talk to them. And dude, I love talking about spiritual stuff and having like these types of conversations that you and I have. And so do the German people. But you know what they don't have? Aggression when they disagree. So the first thing I noticed is I could have just a fundamental disagreement with these German people, and they weren't screaming at me. They weren't, you know, defaming me on social media. You know, they would shake hands, you know, afterwards. And I would have these awesome conversations, but we were under pressure, Ryan, to get them to, quote, say the prayer before we ended the conversation. And so I wouldn't do it. And it was making the leader upset.
How can that be the real thing?
Because
how can whatever I'm believing be so amazing and yet it be so manufactured? Like, it just doesn't even add up.
Totally. It felt like I just had this authentic, real human interaction with these people. And then at the end, the leader of the mission trip wanted us to like ask them where they thought they would go when they die and try to get them to say the, I receive Jesus in my heart. He's the Son of God, the sinner's prayer.
But who was that for? Was that really about them, or was that about the person who was calculating for some contest to be yes. approved by their
we literally had a contest
or their leader yes. or their
we'd come back from the trip and we would go on stage and we would say how many quote salvations we got. So every mission team, there were like 16 different locations that teams went to. And so there was a competition. And, you know, and I finally told the guy on like day six, I said, maybe I don't need to be talking to people because I am not going to ruin an hour long awesome talk I had with somebody by then saying something that makes them think that previous hour that I thought was authentic was a bunch of bullshit. Because it was a sales pitch, because at the end I say, well, I'm actually trying to convert you, and then ruining the whole fucking thing. You know,
talk about not being organic, not being
dude,
in flow,
yeah.
not allowing it to unfold like in a way where it was like divine timing. I mean, you talk
right.
about forcing it.
My God,
I mean,
it was horrible.
How many things ever work out well when we force it based on there trying to demand that the universe bow to our way or our time frame
or another human? Yeah, the universe and the human must bow or I'm not a success. Now you are setting people up for a life of pain and disappointment. And in the Christian space, you don't want to look non-spiritual, so you internalize all those feelings. And then they stick in your body and usually manifest as dis-ease, but you don't want to speak about it because then people will call you less spiritual. And that is just really, really toxic. And we see that now, but when I was in it, I couldn't see it, you know? And
yeah,
that's a whole nother episode, but...
I think one of the biggest things that comes out of just my whole Christian experience is how much I felt threatened by people who believed differently than me.
Oh, yeah.
And how hard it is to navigate human life on planet Earth when you're constantly worried about confrontation, someone seeing it differently than you, and that inferiority complex that I walked around with. And one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me was to be free of the idea that someone seeing it differently than me was a threat. And today,
yes.
the way I would give language to it is, I'm actually fascinated by all points of view. I'm fascinated by how people arrive at the way they see things. And I
yes.
enjoy, truly enjoy hearing their opinion and perspective. I may disagree with it. It may not resonate with me. I may think, "Wait, that's insane." I you know, whatever. But there's no threat. Like it's. I haven't walked a day in their shoes. I wasn't born into their situation. I haven't been in their environments. I'm more fascinated at our whole humanity and this. What does it mean to be human? Than I am thinking any longer that like. Oh yeah, my point of view and the way I see it and what I was born into and the way I was trained and taught and programmed, like, oh man, it's the one and exact yep. only interpretation. And anything outside of that, oh man, you guys are off base.
Right.
I mean, it's just silliness. It really is.
Well, and, dude, like agenda stifles fascination. Now that you no longer have an agenda, each time you interact with somebody that believes differently, you are free to be fascinated. As long as we were like trying to weave them into agreeing with our beliefs, there's agenda. And so we're not even truly listening when they speak. You know what I mean? You're just trying to weave them back because we believed that correct believing equals stability for us.
Yeah.
So when someone has a belief that's different than yours, it's incorrect to you and it shakes your foundation, you know,
yes.
threatens your stability in your thought structures. And we didn't have articulation for this phenomenon at the time. We do now. I'm very grateful, you know, but it's like we spoke about the chair. You know, if your thought structure is a chair with four legs, And Ryan's was, you know, these four beliefs. And then you meet some German guy that he thinks three of them are bullshit. Well, I mean, your thought structure, which is a chair, cannot stand on one leg, or even three, it'll fall over. Right. Even two, you need all four.
Right.
So these people that come and like unscrew one leg, dude, that's enough to cause freak out.
Yeah.
If you believe you're, you know, you sticking to the beliefs that you've been infused with is your stability, your emotional stability, you know. And when I was a pastor, I questioned eternal torment. And 40 people who I'm still in contact with, I dramatically changed their lives. And they will message me and thank 40 people in person that came to our church. Much more than that online, hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands. But the people, it ran off 160 people from our church, even though I did not tell them what to believe. But the local church community, this is how I ended up with the picture of the chair, because I watched people lose their fucking minds. And the reason was their belief structure was a chair, and one of those legs was the belief that hell is real.
Mm.
So I came and I questioned the truth that there is an eternal torture chamber designed and maintained, sustained by a loving God to roast everyone who doesn't stumble upon the correct beliefs in this finite human existence.
And which, I mean, is rather amusing, since there's 40,000 different versions of exactly what you have to do, when you have to do it, what you have to believe, and how you have to believe it. And if you are just a little bit off from any one of those 40,000 different versions, you're basically going to this place. And yet no one can agree on which of the 39,999 of them are actually the wrong one. And they all vehemently believe, even though there's 40,000 versions, that their one version is for sure the one. Yet the reason they can't get quiet or be still or set with their own thoughts is because then wisdom has a chance to come to the forefront, and no one objectively could ever remain in that, when it's so obvious that if there's 40,000 different versions, there is no version at all.
Right. There is no version. There's no version, you know, and.
But people need to be tethered. They want to be tethered to.
Yes. Right. So let's talk about what maybe isn't all bad about it. And I think even now, with where we are now, it helps me to have to be kind of anchored in a belief or two, and everything else is really up for fascination or I don't even say debate, because it's up for listening. It's up for hearing,
exploring.
If you thought about that, up for exploring, you know, because and really my people ask my theology all the time, because I'm a former pastor and everybody knows, and it's that the universe is benevolent. Like, it helps me to believe that the universe is good. Now, that doesn't mean that the universe will not will protect you from pain.
Well, I was getting ready to say, don't you think even within the nuance of the idea of what is good, I don't even think all humans could even agree.
No, we couldn't agree.
There, I mean, like I now see my cancer journey as good. There are people that would say, you're fucking crazy,
what's
Ryan.
What's wrong with you, dude?
That
you
ain't
almost
good.
Fucking died.
So again, it's really difficult to ever completely articulate and give language in a way where all humans' perceptions line up. I don't even think that's even possible anymore.
It's not possible. And I'd like to say, for people who are, and we're going to have some dedicated episodes, which I'm super excited about. I even have people in my mind that I would like to have on as guests.
I've been making a list.
You and I share.
Oh man, I've got some great people to come on.
Because between you and I, dude, I think we could crush it. But there's just something about bringing some, you know, occasionally, especially with this journey. Because
hey,
I believe. Yeah, go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, there is spirituality beyond Christianity. You know, so many people believe, well, how can I continue to be spiritual if I walk away from the quote church? And I would say that, let's say you want to keep calling divinity Jesus. I would say Jesus is way the fuck bigger than your church experience. And he's willing to be called she, him, universe, Buddha, Gandhi, Ryan, Jake. Like he or she or it flows throughout the earth realm to everyone.
Well, I think of Jesus as Christ consciousness. I mean, that right. just that is Pinnacle the current consciousness. That's yeah. the current thing that kind of lands for me. Doesn't mean that's, you know. I don't even think it's even possible. You cannot walk away from that which you are.
Right. Divinity.
So I am divinity. I am made in the image of God. I am a extension of source. I come from the life force that put this all together. However yes. one wants to describe that.
If I was in a church service, I'd say, come on, bro. Come on, bro.
You ain't getting away say from it. That. Like, you're just not. And so the
but
only
we thought
thing,
we were born, you know, sinners and not divine, you know, and right, then we said the only, a prayer to become divine.
Yeah, the only thing we were getting away from were things that didn't make life that great. And it takes a level of brutal honesty.
You have to be to honest get there. About it. What yeah, if and, you asked, is it like, serving me or
yeah,
my
like,
family?
We talked about this in earlier episodes and I can't wait. You know, we've just got so much fun stuff to talk about, but I'll just throw it out there, man. I mean, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm pretty sure I would have never gotten the amazing experience of the incredible pleasure that sex toys bring to your life if I was still a Christian. I'm just saying.
Well, Chris, the relationship between Christianity and sexuality or lack thereof is like super strong, bro. Literally, Michelle and I this morning were talking about when we lost our virginity and how we could not enjoy it because
I mean,
so much guilt.
One of the most pleasurable things that has been given to human beings on the earth, and yet fucked up belief systems ruin that for countless number of people.
Absolutely.
It's an absolute tragedy.
The purity culture. And I had an appointment, a myofascial massage. And it was really powerful. But what I want to share about it is the lady, this was down in Ecuador, and this was such a powerful experience, but she got to, I forget which, it was either meridian or a chakra. She got to the chakra that's related to sexuality.
Okay.
And I'm a 40-year-old man, and I felt like I'm pretty free sexually. And Michelle and I have healed from so much, especially, let me rephrase. She has had a 2-year journey of healing from growing up in the church in terms of sexuality. And now she's so free, and I could not thank the divine more, and neither could she. But, and again, at the time we didn't know it was bad and we thought it was the right thing. And now we know it wasn't, but I start crying and I start having these visions really of when I heard those purity culture teachings and saw them going into this one chakra. And I saw chains and locks. And my consciousness was like, Jake, Michelle's worked on this for 2 years, but you're still locked up sexually.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, because so often we think men don't have sexual trauma from growing up in the purity culture or a fundamentalism of whatever kind it is. It doesn't have to be Christianity, but just those teachings that sex is evil and, you know, demonic, send you to hell. It's only for procreation, blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm just listing them like they're insignificant, but
I mean, let's just be objective for a second. I mean, let's get super, super real. I wonder how many people, okay, if they really sat in stillness for a period of time would realize that sex has been in a category such as duty versus the category it belongs in, which is pleasure, enjoyment,
totally,
intimacy, connection, powerful, right? Like, how many people don't even look forward to sex or even realize how much they are made to want it because their psyche has been so tarnished with a misunderstanding of what it is that they've got it in a completely incorrect category. And so it feels more like work or struggle or hurt or something I have to do.
Yeah.
When the natural state should be, God, I can't wait to do that again.
Right. Yeah. Without the totally millions and millions and millions and millions.
I mean, if you just want to get real and just talk about it, I mean, a woman's vagina and clitoris has like 1,000 pleasure nerve endings. I don't know about you. I'm not a rocket scientist, but how in the hell would a human being be given that if it was just supposed to be something you check off a box once a month or three times a year?
And like, what sort of demented God would create that and then say, you can't fucking use that?
Or
don't fucking touch that.
Or explore.
Yeah, no exploration there.
I mean, it's really something, man. And to even begin to express how grateful I am that somehow, some way, I had enough questions and enough courage and enough willingness and enough destabilizing events in my life to have gone beyond what I was told, to have gone beyond what I feared the most, and to have challenged all of that, and to now in some areas be on the other side. And it's unimaginable to think I could have lived my entire human life and not have gotten to experience some of the unbelievable things that have unfolded as I journey out of conditioning and programming.
And it's ongoing. You know, you've journeyed out of so many significant limiting and harmful beliefs that, you know, a thankfulness develops that you were, for whatever reason, the questioner guy that was like eventually bold enough to say, you know what, these equations don't add up anymore. And I don't know what does add up, but I know that I can't do these worksheets, these math worksheets anymore, where it's like 2 + 7 = 1, you know, and I have to tell myself that a life of faith is believing that 2 + 7 = 1. And then if anybody says 2 + 7 = 9, they're fucking demonic and their beliefs are wrong. And, you know, every cult, because you can take it beyond Christianity, bro. If there are systems that are cultish, and some of the signposts are, if you become a dissenting voice, even if you're respectful, if you're just asking for clarification or asking a question or saying, this doesn't quite make sense, can you help me understand that? And then you get silenced, pushed aside, disassociated with, discredited. That is what cults do. So whether that be the United States, whether that be Twitter or Facebook or Christianity or Islam or whatever it is, if there's no place for questioning, it's unchristlike. Because if what is written in the Bible is true, like Christians believe, he said, unless you become like a child, you're not even going to perceive the quote kingdom. And if you have any kids, these little motherfuckers that I love so dearly ask questions nonstop. And cults teach, they beat the childlikeness out of people. And that results in people that don't ask questions because they use threats and fear.
Yeah.
You know, you will go to hell if you question this. Like, you know, and that is all cultish. And even the Bible college I went to, which was so much freer than the Christianity I grew up in. And because of that, I never thought in a million years that it was kind of a cult. But once I left about 3 years later, I looked back and I'm like, oh my God, it's freer than my previous cult, but it's still a cult, just a little freer. but you still can't question. You still can't question anything.
I don't know why this is coming up for me, but since we're just having conversation, I want to bring it up for a second. I'd love to hear a little bit of feedback from you. You know, we've talked a lot about that quote. That's just kind of my guiding lamp, you know, beyond the ideas of right and wrong, there is a field and I will meet you there. You know, and earlier in our conversation today, I talked about this idea that what if there are no such things as mistakes? Because what if we could accept that in the moment, every moment, what we decide to do, we actually believed, even if it was for a split second, we thought it would be a good idea. And I want to take this to an extreme for a second. Let's say that you have someone in your life and they've done something that's really, really wronged you. And you feel just tremendous anger and you want to get revenge. Do you think it's possible, Jake, that in a split second, you could murder someone under the illusion that you truly thought it was a good idea and that you were going to feel better, the world was going to be justified, and that human deserved to die? Is there a chance that even something as catastrophic as killing another human, you could actually say for even a split second, maybe it wasn't very long, the person who did it actually thought for a split second or a moment or whatever that that was going to be a good idea?
Dude, I mean, look at the 100% that's happened on a small scale. And you're asking me if I believe?
Well, what I'm saying is people have a hard time with the quote of beyond the idea of right and wrong.
Right,
a lot
right.
of people will,
oh, they'll
will
say,
go to this
murder.
Like extreme.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. Now I'm
yeah.
with you.
And I go, well, I think there's a deeper truth in the quote. I don't think you can just simplify it down to, oh, well, murder's wrong or right. What I'm saying is there a chance we can be clouded to the point that we could even think carrying out such a hideous act of killing another human could actually convince us that it's a good idea?
I think we can.
And what if we don't awaken from that before we do the physical act? And then later realize, oh shit, that wasn't a good idea. I don't feel any better. In fact, I feel worse. Now that person's life is over as far as this time and space and reality and their physical form and their body. And I have to serve earthly consequences for what I've done. Oh shit. I thought that was going to make me feel better. Oh shit. I thought that was going to be justified. Oh shit. I thought they deserved that. Now I have this greater point of view, but I'm sentenced to prison.
Seismic waves sent to their family and generational line and your family and generational line. And then the people that are alive right now. I mean, because I think the cloudiness could be this person that you momentarily believe it is a good thing to kill them. You have to cease to believe they're a human. They become a symbol for that represents your escape from the pain you're feeling. And if I can just get rid of this because they are the wrong they did to you, they're not a human. But then after you fucking kill them, guess what happens? You realize, oh my God, they are a human. And they weren't just the wrong they did to me. They're a fucking human. And I killed a person, you know? And like, even war requires dehumanization. And the soldiers are haunted because they come home. And guess what happens? They're not going to jail because it's legal to kill during war.
Right.
But guess what they're not exempt from? The fucking realization that they took human life.
Yeah.
And so a haunting begins. They're not, this haunting takes place while they're husbands and fathers or wives and mothers.
I mean, I wasn't in the military and I haven't been closely an associated example, with it.
But like it's anybody that's killed in a way that was legal.
I can't imagine, bro.
That doesn't result in prison time.
Yeah.
The prison becomes the conscience. Even if they're not in a cell. In the cell, you've got your conscience. And they say, you know, a psychopath is basically someone with no conscience, you know, or a sociopath or whatever. They don't have that realization come that I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
They're so callous for whatever reason. And that's really scary. But yeah, I mean, and there's so much dehumanization or killing this group or this person is one step closer to my belief system taking over the world. And that's what I believe heaven on earth is when how I believe and the group that I'm in is the dominant group that controls how everybody thinks. So we got to get rid of everybody that doesn't think like us. If we can't convert them, kill them,
eliminate them.
And that's the Crusades.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Oh, and I mean, by the way, the minute I realized that I didn't believe in a real physical location called heaven was when I realized if I asked 100 people to describe heaven to me, I would get 100 different versions. Because what heaven is heaven is the way you construct in your mind an existence where everything's exactly in order according to how you think it would make you feel good about.
Come on, dude. Yes.
And nobody can agree on that. Because your exact idea of what you feel like would be like this nirvana or perfect life where there would be nothing that you would consider uncomfortable or frustrating or whatever. I mean, it could be simple as we know for a fact there are human beings that, I mean, the joy and the love they have for spending the majority of their time with young children is off the charts. I know, and I have four of them. That is not me. So that person's heaven can't be my heaven. Because if it includes toddlers and young children and finding immense meaning and satisfaction and love and joy from basically being around them 24/7, we ain't on the same page, folks.
Right.
And there's just another example that when you get free, you actually get to start being honest. You know, like Caroline and I, we've really been having some amazing, honest conversation around the fact that neither one of us, I mean, I don't know how else to say it, Jake. It really doesn't come off well, but there's just we really did not want a fourth kid.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, man. I mean, the little guy Arrow is just something.
Yeah.
But we still have moments, even with him here, where we're like, this is not what we wanted.
That's real life, man.
That's
honest.
Real life. And so then, can you be free to express that? And then what comes flooding in? Am I a bad person for even thinking that? Is there something wrong for me? Because shouldn't I want to be in the trenches, down on the floor, playing with this child 7 hours a day? You know what I mean? And what are people going to think of us if we're hiring a nanny and, you know, oh my God. And I think that's why I just couldn't do the Christian thing anymore because I'm already under my own scrutiny about whether the decision I know I want to make is really the one that I ought to make. And then to think I've got to appease my friends, my family, all the fellow church members, the pastor, and this almighty deity that seems impossible to figure out.
Right.
It was just too much, bro.
The burden is
absolutely
so heavy.
Too much. And for me, that too muchness is why I truly believe I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer at 35.
I think, Ryan, not only is it okay to say those things, it's like super imperative to give them voice because it sticks in your body and eventually maybe forms resentment. You know, what you don't process has to go somewhere
and take
some form. It doesn't vanish. I mean, you must process it. And if being open about it, look, my sisters are 13 and 11 years older than I am. I'm under no illusions, you know, and my dad left 2.5 years after I was born. Nobody, quote, wanted a third kid. But dude, my mom will tell you now what a blessing I am and how thankful she is that she in an unplanned way got pregnant with me, as you guys have gotten, got pregnant with Arrow. And we all know how it works, you know, but I'm sure I know she was on birth control and it still happened. But I don't hold anything. If my mom was like, you know what? It was a fucking curveball when I found out that you were in my belly because we were done having kids. You know, right. I would not, as a 40-year-old man, I would not hold that against her because I'd be like, mom, yeah, I mean, you guys were done.
You get it now.
I'm a blessing now.
Right.
Yeah, I get it now.
Well, what's the alternative? Still be upset about what is?
Right. Exactly. Are we going to fight against what undeniably is?
I mean, that's the resistance that I think creates chronic suffering. It's an unwillingness to be honest about how we really feel and a lack of safe space
there
to actually
huge.
Express it.
Yes.
And then,
if your feelings come out in a way like, okay, my wife, her feelings, if she has big feelings, they'll come out in what looks like anger. Mm. So what she did was she stopped voicing her feelings because every time she did, it was too much for people because the packaging wasn't what people like. Mm. So she had to, it's exactly what you're saying. That's why I interrupted. Like, and if your big emotions and your listening come out in a way that isn't, quote, culturally or societally palatable, you still got to get them out. Even if you go into a shed and fucking scream.
Fair enough.
Like, dude, when she did ayahuasca, the medicine told her screaming is her friend.
Incredible.
Not only is screaming not bad, you need to scream. So like the house we were renting, it had this little place she could go. And like, if she was feeling those feelings, dude, she would just fucking go scream because she, like you said, the resistance leads to suffering. And like, you don't know how you're wired. You might want to be one of those people that can, in a very docile, quiet, polite way, voice your feelings. But not everybody's like that. I know you, you're probably not like that.
Well, this is very fascinating.
So you need a safe space.
Yeah, this is very fascinating because I think at times it is a point of conflict, like with Caroline and I, because she has her ideas of how one should process their feelings, their emotions, and how that should be expressed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So do I. But what we both fully need to live in is neither one of those ideas is our own. She was handed that in her environment, and I was handed mine in my environment.
Yep. And now you guys are married.
They're not right or wrong. And then I think about my late father, and I think about studying the fact that when a brain tumor comes about in the brain, what is attached to that is stubbornness, unresolved resentment, lack of ability to express frustration and anger, unwilling to examine beliefs. And look, Jake, I had a great father. My dad was awesome. He really was. I mean, but those definitely describe my dad.
Man.
He just wasn't able. He was told to be a good Christian. You aren't allowed to be mad.
Right.
So he stuffed his anger for so long that he built his own brain tumor.
Holy shit. While you're stuffing down, you're building something.
Yeah. So all these people who think they're avoiding something are actually simultaneously creating something they're not going to want. So not every time,
okay, it's imperative.
So every time we chicken out, I know, right? Every time we chicken out because we think our spouse is going to not handle it, or every time we think we're just going to throw it under the rug so we don't cause any issues within our family or with our parents or a sibling, or God forbid we spoke our mind with our business partner or a friend, or even something as simple as, you know what, I've partnered with you in the last three pickleball tournaments or tennis tournaments or whatever, and I'm just not enjoying it. I don't want to anymore, but I don't like hate you. I don't think you're like a bad human. I'm not against you. It's just, you're at a different place in your sport journey than I am. And so, yeah. And yet how many people can't even be honest, and they think the better way to go. Now, listen, I'm not saying you just spew out every
absolutely
fucking thought
not.
You've ever had. Come on.
No.
By
but
no
like,
means.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that there isn't some consciousness in when you do it and what environment you do it in,
yeah,
and the way you come across and you're come from and how you deliver it. I mean, I believe in respect and tactfulness. There is a way. I'm not saying
absolutely
to just be completely,
no,
you know, I don't even know what the word
I
is.
I know what you're saying. Like,
yeah, I think you know what I'm
we're
saying.
We're especially in the US, there's such a lack of direct honesty that when direct honesty comes to us, we think it's assholeness.
Right.
You know, but it's not. It's just because our frame of reference is off. You know, dude, I married the most direct and honest person I've ever met, maybe until I met you. And our first few years of marriage, I'm coming from a family where we bury everything down and don't talk about the real stuff.
That's Caroline. Yeah.
And she came from a family where screaming happened in the house, like all the time. And like, she would flip out. And so we got, and everybody was insanely honest and open. So there was a massive adjustment period for me. And her frustration would be rooted in the fact that I wasn't like, she would be like, sometimes I just want you to fucking yell at me. And I would say, well, that's not really how I fight. So I'm not the guy that's going to yell at you until like, I really have to be pushed.
Yeah.
And it has happened for sure. But like those two, right? Like it's the conditioning. It's where we came from, what we were born into. They collide in a marriage, the two styles. And like, if we can just be aware, okay, you communicate this way. I'm used to communicating this way. All right. I'll do my best to be mindful of how you like things packaged. But guess what? Sometimes the package arrives on the doorstep and it ain't what you ordered. You know,
I mean, it's
I
true.
Still love you. A relationship, yeah, is not on the table.
Right.
You know, right. And that's what we would say. Like, relationship is never on the table, meaning it's never up for abandoning.
So the question,
even as
Jake,
bad as the fight gets,
the question, Jake, is, can I enter my next decision? Can I enter the next relationship if for some reason the one that you have been in has come to an end for whatever reason, because you've parted ways, divorce, death? Can I enter the next investment? Can I take the next shot on the tennis court or the pickleball court? Can I enter the next season with my child or children? Can I go for it again when it comes to my health? The question is, can I show up with absolute enthusiasm and anticipation that the next time I go after improving my health, I see results like I've never seen before? The next investment decision I make floods in profits like so incredibly massive that I wonder where they've been the whole time.
Yeah.
Can I lose rallies, points, matches, tournaments, and still have confidence and enthusiasm that the next shot is going to turn it around and I'm going to start playing the way I know I'm capable of playing? Right. Can I go into the next meeting, date, friendship, romantic relationship without dragging anything that has previously traumatized me, impacted me, or put stuff into my psyche, and have enthusiasm for the possibilities of what could happen, what could unfold, what I could experience. How many times can we show up to life to show up with enthusiasm and with that childlike awe and wonder and really be open to all the wonderful possibilities that always exist because the universe is vast and God is benevolent and everything is rigged for our good and rigged for our growth? Can I keep showing up time and time again and saying, I give no attention to my thoughts? I give no attention to the ideas in my head that tell me it's going to be like something I've already experienced. No, it's not. Nothing is ever exactly the same unless we attach the meaning and make it the same.
I notice myself beginning to go into that old pattern of thinking it's going to go poorly. I notice it, but I'm not partnering with that.
I see the
loop trying to suck me into the cyclone. Nope. I see you, loop. I know you're there because of the years and years of experiences, but I'm not partnering with you anymore. I make a choice as a powerful human being who creates their own fucking experience that I'm going to go forward with enthusiasm. I think that's a great thing to ponder, you know, if it's okay to wrap this one up.
Yeah, we are.
Look at that. There's my thing that I do where I ask for permission. Michelle is giving me right now. That's my thing that I'm trying to heal from. I don't know where it comes from.
Mm, interesting.
But I'll be like, you know, and she'll be like, why'd you ask for me? Why? It's not always her. Why'd you ask permission for that? And I'm like, because I don't know. It's fucking conditioning and programming that I don't want anymore. So thank you for pointing it out. I don't want to be the guy that asked for permission. So there it was. We're all in process. No one's arrived.
Yeah. But well, I think for all of our powerful listeners, I'm going to say these final two things as we taper off here. That's what I encourage you to go within yourself and really ask, are you willing? Because it's a willingness. It's not, it doesn't just zap you from the sky. Are you willing?
Leads to the miracle.
And even if you don't feel enthusiastic, you show up willingly with enthusiasm and eventually the feeling will come.
Yeah.
Are you willing? The miracle is in our willingness to show up again with all the possibilities on the table. Because before we had what we called the bad experiences, the bad investments, the bad relationships, the bad whatever, you went into that with enthusiasm. Is there really any less possibility of the next one not working out great?
The very same possibility as the
same possibilities as the one at the very beginning. The only difference is now you have these imprints on your psyche.
Yes.
And we've given a lot of power to those imprints.
Yes. And in actuality, they have no bearing.
No bearing. Zero. They're meaningless. Because Jake, how many people live in a cycle where they believe constantly that bad luck just constantly floods into their life?
I could probably name 20 people that I know right now.
Okay.
100%.
Well, let's leave them with this. The key word in that is luck. Luck meaning I didn't really have anything to do with it. It just comes. It is not possible for it to only be one-sided. That's not how the universe works.
Right.
So if you're going to sit down and make a list of all the things you've perceived just somehow accidentally came into your life that are bad luck, you have to sit down and make a list of all the things that you realize were actually good luck that have come into your life that you didn't do shit about. You had nothing to do with it, and it still showed up, and it was still there, and you still got to benefit from it.
Right.
There is no bad luck unless there's good luck. So unless you're willing to eliminate the word luck and take full responsibility and say it's all you, good, bad, right, wrong, indifferent, different, whatever, then you don't get to only pick one side. You have to take both. So for every time that supposedly bad luck hit me and that thing I invested in didn't produce a profit and didn't give me money, yeah, but what about the time that I backed into the guy and then we shared information and then for whatever reason, I never heard from him again and I never had to pay out anything on something that should have cost me at least $1,000 deductible. Do I not ever consider yeah. all those times that stuff like that happens?
Dude, if you sit down and do that, if you really sit down and do that with a pen and paper, very quickly you get the revelation that there's a balance. There's an inescapable
of course
pain,
there is.
Pain and pleasure, you know, and what, and you can even get to the point that pain is pleasure. I mean, but at least you could see it, because sometimes it helps people to see it with their own eyes, to actually yeah. see it written. Oh, fuck. It's not all bad. Damn it. It's not all bad. I'm so pissed that there was good shit too. Damn it. That's what we do. Anyway, man.
So good, man. Conversations we have.
Loved it.
I did too, man. I forgot we were even recording. So hopefully those that tune in to this episode feel a sense of hope. They're not alone. They're not insane. They're not schizophrenic. Uh-huh. They're just human. Folks, this has been episode 7, a podcast for humans. We look forward to having you tune in to the next one.